Live It Out podcast. And this week, Tim.
Dave.
We have a special guest.
Ooh.
Who's joining us? Mark Hoffman.
Wow, makes me special?
You're special.
That's awesome.
Just by showing up, you're special.
You're special. Yeah. So, all right, here we go. I do have to start off with an apology. Last week, we went on a rant. I guess it was about 10 minutes. I thought it was three in my mind.
But it was more than three.
It was about 10 minutes.
Don't apologize. It got me like through the first 10 minutes of a run.
All right. Well, that's good. Yeah. That's good. My wife is like, she's like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Is this a podcast about following Jesus or is this about the Cubs? I'm like, well, technically it was about the Cubs, the Smokies, and Arsenal.
And I heard from some Two Rivers Arsenal fans, so it served a good purpose.
That is good. I was driving down the road the other day, and of all the stickers you would think you would see in East Tennessee on the back of a pickup truck,
yeah,
was an Arsenal stickler.
Really?
Like, who's going to, like, in a pickup truck, big yeah, Arsenal fan.
Didn't see that coming.
All right, so this past weekend we were talking about how heart-changing transformation demands intentional pursuit of repaired relationships. And as we get started, do either of you have a story about the tension not a story that you shared this past weekend, Mark, but like a story where you're like, okay, hey, this is the real life of this. Because this past weekend, it sounded good in theory in my mind, but what's this look like in real life? Hey, yeah, that's a good idea. But is there like, oh, hey, I have this current relationship where like this is going to really matter for me?
Good question.
This is not a current relationship. When I was in college, there was a guy who scanned our student IDs to get into the dining hall. And he must have lived in there. He wasn't a college student, I don't think. He wasn't one of the students there. So he was, we're talking my junior, senior year of college, I think. He was younger than me. He had to be. He was probably 18, 19 years old. And whenever I would scan my card and come in, he would say, he would call me big guy, chief, sport, use things like that.
You know it's because he didn't know your name, right?
Yeah.
I do that all the time.
But I took offense at it. I was like, you're younger than me, man.
Was he a student?
He wasn't a student.
Oh. He was just a young guy.
He was just like a young guy who lived in that town. And I took great offense at it. I don't know why I was thin-skinned about that. Probably because I, as a 21-year-old, I looked like I was 16 or something. So I was already on edge about that. So I took it very personally. And I never blew up at the guy. It wasn't like anger that I felt towards him, but it was definitely a word you used last weekend, Mark, contempt. It was like he didn't make my blood boil. It was like, you're not worthy of my time, you know? Yeah. Like when I think about this passage, I often remember that dude and the difference between, I never lost my temper with him.
I'm not asking you to actually name him, but do you remember his name?
I don't know. I never.
You got to find out and go make it right.
I know. I probably do. That's the repairing the relationship part that probably needs to come.
Wow, that your mind went back that far. I can go back like to last week.
Yeah, well, I can too.
Wow. There's people that have come to mind. I think. And relationships. Relationships are tough. I can't imagine anybody that doesn't have some level of tension or conflict in terms of other people. But yeah, there are folks we've talked about this in other circles. Like, it's just shocking to me sometimes that you can be so close to someone and be in great relationship, and within, a misunderstanding or a conversation, move from being maybe even the hero in someone's life to being the villain. I think we've talked about that before.
And yeah.
Yeah, there's a few folks that come to mind, and I've been praying and asking God, okay, what do you do with that? What's my role? What's my responsibility? Spirit, show me, because that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah. In my world, it's one thing for me to say, hey, I'm angry about or with a certain person.
Mm-hmm.
But it's another thing for me to try and soften it in my mind. Try, how do I how do I soften it? So this week we're going to talk about that. There's a question in Live It Out. Like, how do you soften the idea of being angry with someone? How does that work for you? How do you tend to kind of make it less bad in your mind?
Right.
In my mind.
Yeah.
In the past I've done, this is what got all up in my business over the last couple of weeks, but in the past in my mind, I would garner support. I'd talk to somebody else about it and talk about the infraction and like get agreement. And so then all of a sudden it feels like, well, that was pretty bad. So it softens not the offense, but it softens like my ability to own it. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like it makes it less of, it makes it less about me and more about them.
Yeah.
And and in actuality, man, when you take this and you actually talk to God about people that you have differences of opinion with or just have falling out, and wow, there's a whole different take on it when you surrender in a space and God deals with your heart, right?
Yeah. Yeah, there is like, it's, I was laughing as you said that, because that's such a, I'm just realizing that's such an easy and for my conscience, helpful thing to do, not in a good way, to go, well, oh, I'll just tell somebody else about how frustrating this person is, you know? I'll tell somebody else about it, about how much they got on my nerves, or what a boneheaded thing they did, or, you know, like, I'll tell somebody else about it. It's the thing that's so easy to do is like, just tell a story where someone else looks bad and I look good. And when someone has offended me or made me angry, that's a really easy time to do that. And yeah, it's sort of like a crutch for my conscience. So I feel less like, oh, other people think they're annoying or irritating or bothersome or, you know, mean or whatever. They'll think that too. Then it's not just me.
So this is good. This is real life. I want to enter into the tension here. How do we live in the tension between who is it in our world that we process with? Who are the people that we have confidence with? Who are the people that can actually help shape our heart? Because if you're going to say to me, you can't ever say that to another person about express your, as somebody who has to verbally process in order for things to make sense. Mm-hmm. If you're just going to say you can't verbally process, I'm not exaggerating, my head would explode.
Yeah.
Like it's going to come out in all kinds of unhealthy ways.
Yeah. There's
so what's the healthy tension there?
Cause yeah, I agree. There is a piece of, am I crazy here? You know, like I need another perspective to see, like I had this interaction with this person and here's how it left me feeling. Is that reasonable? I think you can have a conversation like that where you know, like you said, somebody you trust. So just telling someone about the situation that happened, I don't think is necessarily bad, but I see in myself that I do that not just to go like, did I have a reasonable reaction, but to like pile on that other person.
Yeah.
Like it's not just, I want other people to know that they're bad.
Yeah.
I want other people to agree that they're the offender in this situation and that I'm the offended.
Trying to garner support.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and there's exactly a difference in that.
There is.
But you kind of got to know internally.
And I think I do know internally, and yeah, I sometimes too. Go a little further because I just want the,
me too.
I want the hit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I want to make sure I've had the hit. And I think what you're talking about, Dave, is there's a reality that there's people in our lives who are just part of our confessional community. There's people that we should trust and engage with. And matter of fact, I have that right here in this space with you guys, like maybe not on a podcast, but in a closed room with a door. But like, hey, I need to get this off my chest. I need to express it out loud. And I don't have to be so careful that it might sound like I'm ridiculing the person because I feel safe and secure in the relationships we have. You know that there's more at stake and there's more going on in my heart and my character than that. It doesn't mean that I need to do that with 10 other people.
Right.
And I think that's where in the past I felt like, well, that now you're just trying to elevate you so that the person looks bad. You can feel good about you and never do anything about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense.
And I do think it's some of it is knowing yourself and knowing your own motivations, because I can definitely, I can sense that in myself when I'm just pushing to make someone look bad and me look good. But I know a couple of people you know, people who are in my world and my
life.
I know a guy. Who their default is, I made a mistake. That's sort of their default. That is not my default. I tend to go, somebody else made a mistake. I know some people who very much their default is, I made a mistake. I did the wrong thing. I shouldn't have done this.
Is it actually owning it, or is it just their way of handling it?
That's their way of handling things. And so in that case, they probably do need to process that and have the perspective of, wait a second, you were wronged there. It's okay for you to feel that. Okay, now what do you do with the relationship? But that person probably needs to process that more, whereas I might need to process it less.
So in this series, over the Sermon on the Mount, it's all about how do we live in God's kingdom. That's Jesus is laying it out. Like, what does it look like for us to live as citizens in God's kingdom? And contempt is something we talked about this weekend. Like, it's one thing just to be like, okay, I'm angry or I'm mad, but it's something else to decide that somebody isn't worth our time, our love, our attention, that like we're going to cut them off. They're not even worthy of my consideration. And Jesus is saying that, okay, this is a problem that is demonstrating that you're living in the kingdom of the world and not in the kingdom of God. That's a tough concept,
yeah.
Right? As you think about one of the things that we processed through last week's sermon meeting, like, what's the difference between, okay, there's people that I have close relationships with, and then there's people groups out there, you know, whether that's maybe they're same of, you know, right here in East Tennessee where we live, there's different groups of people have different interests. There's, you know, there's the soccer moms and there's the softball dads and there's, you know, these groups of people, but then there's also ethnic groups of people and people groups around the world. What do you find yourself in this tension of maybe having contempt in close relationships or maybe having contempt for people groups? And how do you navigate your way in that?
Whew. So I wasn't in sermon meeting last week. I don't know if I remember, I was off that day, and I haven't really thought about this people group thing as much.
You mean
much.
You actually had a day off?
I That's did. Totally we had, unacceptable. We had great friends from Minnesota totally down visiting. It was fun.
You mean you don't work every day?
Not every day. But I can definitely see, like, there are categories of people who I think I sometimes maybe in my mind I'm trying to like balance the scales. So it's like a Robin Hood, like a moral Robin Hood complex or something. That's just, I'm just thinking out loud here.
Yeah.
But like,
apparently.
Like if somebody is on top in society, a category of people who are on top in society, those are the people who I would say it's easiest for me to have contempt for.
Yeah. Right now in our culture, it's actually encouraged.
Yeah.
In our culture, you're encouraged to have contempt for the people who are on top.
Right. And that's what's easy for me. That's the easiest, you know? I mean, and especially if it's like a celebrity, you know? I mean, like, it's just like, well, everybody loves them, so I don't. You know? I feel like that's kind of my...
I hadn't even thought of that.
That's kind of my response. But not just celebrity, not just somebody on TV, but even, like... people you bump into on the street, somebody who, I'll be real honest, somebody who wears sunglasses inside an airport terminal.
That got real specific.
Why?
Yeah, because if you wear sunglasses inside the mall, you might just not take your sunglasses off when you walked into the mall. But if you're wearing sunglasses inside an airport terminal, that means you walked into the airport, you took the sunglasses off, you put them through an x-ray machine, you got to the other side, and you put the sunglasses back on while you walked down the hallway of the dinner. And so to me, that just says, you think you're better. You think you're a celebrity or something, and you got to wear sunglasses inside. And so because you think something of yourself, I'll show you, I'm going to think nothing of you. You know? That's how black my heart is.
That is...
Wow.
That's an epic rant right there. Yeah, that's
really
awesome.
Good.
Yeah. But that's the kind of thing. You know, if I think somebody thinks too much of themselves, I would call it contempt. That's a challenge for me to love that kind of person. not just the sunglasses.
Wow.
Top that, Mark Hoffman.
I don't know if I can, but the thing that comes to mind, like the people groups you listed are like, okay, apart from Tim's, you know, the celebrities, but like, you know, soccer moms or families or whatever. But the other day we got in a conversation about just different people. We not only look, ultimately you're looking up to them to look down on them because you think they think they're better than you.
Uh-huh.
But oftentimes it's the people that we think we're better than, mm-hmm. you know, and so... There was a friend of mine recently said, you know, I just have a really hard time with people who are Walmart shoppers. I'm like, what? Walmart shoppers? Like, how is that a thing? Well, you know, typically at Walmart, they show up in their pajamas.
I know this friend of yours. Hey, it's not me. I just want to say it's not me.
They show up in their pajamas and slippers thinking they're dressed for the day because I just have a really tough time thinking about, they bother me. So it's like, I mean, if you play the text out, like if you have contempt, if you think the person isn't worthy of respect or even worthy of the air you breathe, like you've just annihilated a bunch of Walmart shoppers. And
yeah.
Well, I live in Lenore City. I'm a little defensive. We have a nice Walmart. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I think it's those types of people and those groups of people. There's not just lifestyles that we can easily talk about and point to, but in the text that he's getting after in Matthew 5, I mean, predominantly he's talking to followers and believers. Even last week we talked about, he's talking about brothers, folks that are within the church, people that are of faith that you're looking at and looking at differently. And one of the things that comes to mind, and it grieves my spirit, grieves my heart. We've talked about it from the platform, but there are literally people within our church who are divided and who cannot speak to each other in families because one voted a certain way last fall and one voted another way. Mm-hmm. And it's literally divided the family to the degree where they can't even gather together anymore for holidays or celebrations because I cannot believe that you could be a part of that group and believe those things.
Yeah.
And both sides are saying, you're not worthy of the respect. There's a literal contempt below the surface. And I don't think it's as far removed as I think I'd like to think about in my own life and my own relationships as well as within the church. And that's what Jesus is getting after. That's what Matthew's defining here and describing here.
I think it's important that we would be able to, because Jesus is describing a world that's different than the world in which we live.
Right.
And right now, the world in which we live says that what you just described there, Mark, is totally acceptable. That you should write off people who have a different political view than you. That's okay. You should write off people who view the world different than you. Like, this is totally fine. And so it really, Jesus' message couldn't be any more relevant.
Like, right.
Wait, this is not kingdom behavior. That's worldly behavior, mm-hmm. and makes total sense. But for us, as followers of Jesus, living under his rule and reign, it looks different. And so for me, it's end of school year. And in the neighborhood where I, you know, the neighborhood where I live, just reminded the other day, guy pulled up to the stop sign, four-way flashers. And I'm like, it begins. Here we go. This guy, he owns the world. He's on a street. There's nowhere to park. And he pulls up to the stop sign and he puts on his flashers and he's basically saying, I'm not moving. I'm not going anywhere. He's in his car. I'm not going anywhere because what's happening in my world is most important. Yeah. My kid is most important. And so I was like, it wells up in me right there. And I would have said it was anger. But after this week, I would say contempt.
Yeah.
It was contempt. Like, are you kidding me? How do you possibly think you're so, you know, your kid's so important and you're so important that people can't get to their homes? Yeah. And then in that, and not even looking in the mirror long enough to go, well, how do you think you're so important that you shouldn't be inconvenienced to drive around right. this dad who's trying to pick his kid up from school? And it's really just because, I'm just going to say what it is, because the schools do a terrible job taking care of their facilities and the communities in which we live. And now it's annoying to live by a school. It just is what it is.
Do you have contempt for schools, Dave?
I have contempt for the school system here.
Yeah.
You know, going, wait, how can't you make your property look decent?
Yeah.
You know? And so it's like every time I go by the school, I'm already on edge. Uh-huh. And so now it's
The school's doing something else to me.
Looking for a target. Yeah.
Right? Aren't they building you a new entrance?
They built it. This guy's parked on the new entrance.
Oh. Okay, but here's the thing, is some of that could be kind of nitpicky, like, oh, don't worry about it. The guy did something annoying and you felt something or you thought something. Like, that's part of me is like, okay, we don't, you know, it's like, oh, do I have to police my mind all the time and be so nitpicky about this? But I'm confronted by Jesus is so kind of nitpicky in this passage, you know? Like, you say to somebody, you fool, and he doesn't mean literally just the word you fool, but I do think that what comes through in this passage is that Jesus is saying, in my kingdom, there's a different way to live that takes just the way you think about somebody else in everyday life. It actually matters. You're going to treat them differently. You're going to treat other people differently after your interaction with them. Those little things aren't just being nitpicky. How you view other human beings says something about you, your heart, how you view God, what you believe about him. So pay attention to those things. So every time I think, oh, maybe I don't need to be so nitpicky about this, I think Matthew 5 reminds me, I probably better be nitpicky with myself
about this. And for me, the obscure ones, they really do help me take and translate it into the closer relationships. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, well, now in my home with my wife, with my daughter, how does that get translated? At work, coworkers, friends. Okay, how does that get translated? It does help me reflect on, surely if a dude with his four-way flashers at a stop sign can have that level of contempt in me. My go-to example is, why do I feel so much contempt for my family when I show up at home and the trash bag liner is not? And that has not happened, I want to say.
Of course it won't. Happened. You went public.
No. Yeah.
Who would do that?
I did not. And man, it has not. It's been, it's been good. It's been good. Everything's right in my world. Tim, I think you make a great point. Like, I think sometimes, like, that's what we're trying to get at when we were writing the question. Like, how do you justify things in your mind? Mm-hmm. Like, anger is one of those things that we started off talking about, where we kind of like maybe try and rally people to our side. We try and get people in there. We maybe try and write it off. We try and name it something else. You guys kind of dodge that. Like, what do you name anger as? Like, how do you think about it? How do you reframe it in your mind? Are there other words you use that rather than just saying, yes, I'm angry right now?
Yeah, I just say I'm frustrated.
Yeah, and sometimes frustrated is valid. Yeah, it doesn't mean it's not that.
But I think what I'm doing is saying, yeah, I don't want to own that it's actually anger or contempt. I'm just really frustrated with that person. So it doesn't sound as cruel or as like there's something I got to do about this. I can just be frustrated.
Yeah.
And
I'm just irritated. You're very irritating to me right now.
Like Terry said, you have an edge right now. I'm just frustrated. Well, I'm actually angry.
Yeah.
I just don't want to say I'm angry with you, because that's going to involve a conversation I don't want to have. So
yeah,
I just pull back.
Yeah. That's right? Totally. Yeah.
And you can't deal with every emotion you feel.
No.
And some things I should pull back, but there's other areas I feel like, you know, you need to own it, step into it.
Just being able to say, yeah, I'm angry right now, but if you give me a little bit of space, I won't be in a minute, right? Like, give me time for me to experience the, you know, loving each other enough to say, give me time for me to experience the anger that I'm feeling right now so I don't anger all over you.
Right.
I think that's wisdom, but I think sometimes that's hard to play out in real life relationships. Tim, you made a good point. We're going to switch here to the whole point, Sermon on the Mount. You took us there, and then I kind of took us back. So this whole idea of living, like, this is what it looks like to be a citizen of the kingdom of God, and it's extreme. And this week, you introduced the idea that there's some hyperbole in Jesus's teaching, and this week's example, I think if we're just reading our way through it, doesn't, you know, you talked about this weekend, it doesn't seem as extreme as chop off your hand. I mean, that seems pretty extreme, but it's still really extreme. Yeah. He's still using a literary tool of exaggeration on purpose. So how does that help us? I mean, and he uses it a lot during this section. How does the hyperbole that Jesus uses in his teaching, how does that help us?
So let me throw this out there. Yeah. You can tell me if it makes sense or not. I was sitting with somebody else talking about the passage this past week. And he said, well, it's kind of like a parent. Like a parent doesn't say to their kid, hey, I really want you to shoot for 60%. And then be all excited that they made it to 58. You know, it's like there's this extreme reality when you're, hey, be holy as I'm holy. And there's this call to something that we're literally, it's impossible for us to do. And yet it's possible for us to pursue in the power of the Spirit. Like there's this 100% reality, this radical call. And in this text too, there seems to be an urgency about it. Like, get after it, go do this thing, like do this thing.
Yeah.
There's this space in it. It feels like, yeah, we're called to the impossible, and yet the impossible's possible in walking in and through the Spirit, right?
Yeah.
It's like that's that parental kind of, hey, I don't, if I just said go 80% or 60%, that's what you'd shoot for, but go 100%.
Yeah. And I think when we're communicating, we use exaggerated language or hyperbole all the time mm-hmm. in the way we describe things, even with like a little kid, you know, like I love you to the moon and back or mm-hmm. whatever, you know, it's like, well, what does that mean? You know, sometimes it could be less impactful than cut off your hand. I mean, that's extreme, but like, okay, well, wait, you're here at the altar and you described this weekend, like, okay, there's a lot that went into getting to that point, but it, like you just said, it shows how urgent yeah. it is, right? Like he's not just saying this stuff because, oh, these six examples, it's just nice. It's a nice way to live. He's saying something more dramatic than that. And he's getting our attention, but he's getting his followers' attention. Like, hey, this really matters.
Yeah, this really matters. That's what it says to me. This really matters, whether you even could do the thing that's described or not. It's not about like how hard, it's not even about, I don't think even so much about like how much effort should you put into keeping this command of Jesus. I don't think that's it. But I think it's see how much this matters in God's world, his kingdom, the way he created. This matters a lot.
So this whole section right here draws us into a big tension. Because we know that Jesus doesn't accept us because of our performance. And yet it seems like he's calling us to perform in a certain way as we follow him. And so as you think about this section in particular and living out the righteousness we have in Christ, what does it look like for us to live out the transformation that we've been given, that we are undergoing, and that we will undergo? Right? What does it look like for us to put that in motion? What's the tension there that you feel between, I know that this isn't a way for me to earn salvation, so to speak, or to earn my way into the kingdom. But now that I am living in the kingdom of God, there does seem like it's a high call to live out the transformation I have experienced and I am experiencing. What's the tension that you feel there?
And growing up in a house, it has no bearing in the world here, but like in the church I was raised in and the community I grew up in, like the Hoffmans, oh, you got to be a good Hoffman boy. I was the last of five boys. And there, you know, to be a Hoffman, you had to do this, this, and this. And I remember my mom and dad at times even using that reference to say, this is who we are. This is who Hoffmans are. This mm-hmm. is who we do. Like, I remember I got busted shoplifting. We don't steal. Hoffmans don't steal. Like, mm-hmm. you know, this is the level at which you've got to stay in. And yet I get that. And like, it felt like it was being a drive toward performance. But when I think about it from Jesus's perspective in this sermon, like, I think we hear sermons and we often think sermons mean suggestions. And I don't even know if this was a sermon as much as a compilation of a lot of thoughts and ideas and messages. But in this sermon, it's more than a suggestion. He is saying, this is who you are. This is who we are. We're followers. So therefore, follow. And there's something that brings a lighter approach to the faith and to walk with Jesus in trying to step into the identity I already have mm-hmm. than the identity I think I was driving toward my whole life, to be a good Hoffman, a good Christian, a good follower. And what would that look like? And there's boxes internally, even though I was anti-Pharisaic in my mind, I was Pharisaic in every way I practiced, right? Uh-huh. And there's something that has shifted and turned and is still shifting and turning in me to go, no, this doesn't reflect who I am. So therefore, let me be who God's called me to be, whether it's in relationship with my wife, my kids, my grandkids, my neighbors, my friends. And there's something that's not as condemning, but deeper than condemning, than than that, then that's calling me to live in a different way. And I don't know that I've fully grasped it yet, but I know it has everything to do with where we landed last week, well, and this week and the weeks to come. There's a reliance and a dependence on the Spirit that is at the core of all of this, that I'm not condemned, but I'm called to live the life that God's called me to live. So even in the small areas of life, conversations, relationships, whatever, there's something new that's taking place that's, that's life-giving.
Yeah, life-giving is a good way to put it. I mean, I try and remember in that tension of, you know, this isn't about doing a bunch of really good things, but because Jesus is the one who's righteous, not me, but I also want to live the life he's called me to. Life-giving. When you get to the end of this Sermon on the Mount, you get to that story of, okay, the man who hears these words and does them, he doesn't say is applauded. The person who hears these words of mine and does them is the person who is applauded or who is given a gold star or a crown or a, you know, he has a life that's sturdy, that can stand up in the storms of life. So like you're saying, Mark, it's like there's something there. We have to read this, I think, through the lens of this is supposed to be about living a durable life, a life that's life-giving for me and for the people around me. And it can't just come out of, I got to follow this command or I'm in trouble. And that really does go through all of them. And I think this anger one is one of those, but we get into some other ones that maybe anger I can go, okay, it's about my heart and the big picture. And when I'm wrong, I just got to ask God to correct my heart, teach my heart differently. But some of the ones we'll get into in the next couple of weeks, I think people can, it can be a heavy burden of, I didn't obey this the right way.
Yeah.
I screwed up again. I didn't obey it the right way. And Jesus, the lead up to this is that there's good news that the kingdom of God is here. And so we got to be able to read these things not as just, oh man, I got to get this right or God is going to destroy me kind of command, but instead he's showing me the way to live. And like you're saying, Mark, it should be life-giving.
I think that's a good observation as, you know, we look at the flow and one of the commentators I was reading is like, okay, it's a compilation. But if even in the compilation, if you look at it as one singular thing, which Matthew wrote it as one singular thing, it is driving towards a point. And if you don't do that, it looks like a bunch of little random stories. Like for years, I was like, everybody's like, wow, that's the most amazing sermon ever given. And I'm like, no,
it jumps all over the
place. You'd get it. This is not hyperbole. You wouldn't pass a sermon class if you wrote this and turned it in as a sermon, just because it seems like it's touching on so many different things.
Yeah,
like, well, where's, like, stick to an idea, right? Like, it just wouldn't pass. And so I'm like, wait, but yet it is totally amazing in the way that Matthew has brought it all together. So it really isn't, when you look at flow and you look at structure, it really isn't random at all, even though on the outside it appears like it is, because it is describing this kingdom life. And I think so often, you know, even as he says, he gives these contrasting six illustrations. You've heard it said, but I say to you, through all of it, it's not corrective. It is, the kingdom of God is here. Here are the people who are going to experience the kingdom life. This is how the kingdom is different from what you've heard in the past. And he's taking us somewhere in that. Mm. You know, it's not like, hey, you guys got it all wrong. And he is going to correct the Pharisees, don't get me wrong, but not here. It's like this is the life. He's painting a vision of the life of living under God's rule, and the time is here to do it. And so for years, I just saw it. I was like, oh yeah, he's in there just giving them the what for, but really it's like, no, he's painting a picture. Imagine what life in the kingdom could be if you allowed the transformation that this has always been about to come from the inside out. Well, this is going to look different in how we express ourselves and now it's in our anger, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and now it's going to end with this whole radical idea that sets the frame of be complete as I'm complete. Be perfect as I'm perfect, as your Father in heaven is perfect. That's so beyond our imagination. And he's saying, okay, that's the life. This is the life that I've called to give you to. So in that, as we look to this week, as we look towards Live It Out, I'm going to give you both an opportunity to say, okay, what's your big encouragement for Two Rivers Church? As we're walking our way through the Sermon on the Mount over this summer, what's your big encouragement for Two Rivers Church as we're saying, keep going, keep following, hang in there? Any words of encouragement, maybe wisdom to say, hey, as we look over the course of this coming weeks, here's our encouragement for you.
Well, since I'm in your boy's space and Tim always gets the final word, I'll go next. He gets he gets the final word.
We could flip it.
No, it's good. I think the question you asked a few minutes ago was answered. Like, how do you live in the tension? And I think if I had one thing to say, it would be live in the tension. The tension doesn't mean you're not doing it right. The fact that there's tension, there's something that's within your own spirit and the Spirit of God within you saying, hey, there's more that you're being called to. This message, this gospel living, this flipped right side up life, I think should cause some tension in our life, because I don't know that we're living in the fullness of the life that God died to give us. And so it's not, hey, where are we going to be condemned over the next several weeks? Where are we going to be guilt-ridden by what we're not doing? But who we are and who we can be and who we continue to be transformed to be, that's the work of the Spirit. And God himself is the one that's transforming us. Absolutely. And yet he's not going to transform us apart from our surrender and our engagement in. So if there's tension, man, that's awesome. Like, the tension isn't bad. The tension says there's something stirring within us that we're supposed to give ourselves to.
Yeah. Since Tim's going to give the last word, I'm going to go before Tim goes.
Okay.
My encouragement is risk intellectual honesty as we work our way through the Sermon on the Mount to allow you to be honest with you. And I may be the only one who struggles with lying to myself, but I'm on a quest to not lie to me. And so what does it look like for me to be intellectually honest, not lie to me, so that the Spirit of God can show me the things to do all of what Mark just said? Tim?
My encouragement would be, don't get caught up in just looking at yourself, being obsessed with yourself and your actions. Those things matter. And we said a lot just in the last half hour about, you got to know your heart. That matters. But don't stop looking at Jesus. You got to look at him. It's exactly what Scripture says. You know, fix your eyes on him. Not just the things he told you you should do, but the kind of life that he says is possible, the life that he modeled as possible, and what he did to make it possible. Keep your eyes on him as you wrestle through the rest of this sermon. That's my encouragement.
All right. Great final word. Hey, Mark, thanks for being here.
Thanks for letting me join you guys
today.
Yeah.
See you.